This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special guest episode on the Authentic Persuasion Show. Today with me, I am excited to have Ms. Kelly Decker from Beyond Finance. Now, what's fun is that Kelly spent 17 years in the third-party debt collection industry, and then the last 6 years focused on managing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of distressed receivables in debt relief programs across hundreds of debt relief companies. And then she joined Beyond Finance to build and strengthen their relationships with banks, lenders, creditors, and any company on the spectrum of, you know, accounts receivable debt collections. And she's coming on the show, and why I'm so excited is to share insights about what she's seen as it relates to sales, persuasion, and, you know, obviously persuading people who have some level of debt, or they're in the spectrum of being in collection calls or distressed borrower in some way, and then how that fits in. And then obviously what she's also been seeing from leadership perspective, what companies do that are successful, where companies are challenged, you know, as that outside perspective. So Kelly, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Glad to be here.
So one of the things that I think of, you know, when we first talked, and then my mind is just kind of spinning on it, is I think mostly, you know, debt collections and things like that, that you're in the big umbrella of, right? But in various services with programs and people who sign up for help. But I think of, you know, debt collection mode and distressed borrowers, where the classic view is that strong arm tactic, right? It's lots of phone calls, it's lots of outreach, it's just short of harassing and harassment into getting someone to pay. You know, the government obviously has over time has limited the amount of what the harassment looks like. And what I find is fascinating too is that if I think about that, and where I know our conversations go, which is how things are now, is I think of that old school collection mode, or, you know, what somebody experiences, similar to the old school sales tactics of manipulation and tricking people and pushing people and different strategies, right, which people don't enjoy either, and how that has evolved or should have evolved, and then what you're seeing in the industry. So, like, in your career, let's start with this, like, how have you seen over the time that you've been involved with this, where debt collection companies or people who are getting calls about their debt or dealing with programs about debt, about, you know, how those conversations are being approached now versus, you know, the old school mode or the classic mode?
The Wild West, as we
refer
to it as. Sure. So way back, 20 plus years ago now, when I first started in collections, I started as a debt collector, started on the floor, started calling people, asking them to pay the debts that they owed. And, you know, you go through a training. They kind of give you some points to try to get these folks to pay the debt that they owe. And, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But once you get on the floor and you experience like real life in a collection agency, you realize back then that, you know, the folks who were more manipulative, who were more pushy, who not just harassed the person who owed the money, but, you know, their family, their employers, the Wild West, folks calling and claiming that they were someone that they weren't, sheriff's office, investigators. Like, I've worked in a wide variety of shops in my career. But as I had learned, because I am not a person who likes to be manipulated or lied to, so I don't want to manipulate or lie to people. So it was really hard for me to do that. So for a while, I was not very successful because I didn't know what to do. The method of pushing people to pay just wasn't working for me, mostly because I'm just not that type of person. And when people feel pushed into a corner and that they don't have any way out, they're going to end up giving you money. They're going to pay that bill because they feel like there's something that's going to come behind them if they don't. And I don't, I can't put my head on the pillow at night and sleep soundly with that, you know? So much later in my career, I landed at an agency who, thought about debt collections as more of sales. So let's get on the same page with these people. Let's make sure, A, that we're talking to the right person. Let's make sure that we're talking to people who have the intention to pay, simply by asking them, what are your intentions about this bill? You know, like having a conversation, because you obviously that question opens up Pandora's box, right? That's going to be here's my story as to how I got here and didn't pay my bill. And most people just want to be heard, you know, is what I have found out. At the end of the day, they just want validation that they're, whatever it was that they went through or experienced was, you know, valid and true and messed things up in my life enough that I couldn't pay my bill at this time. So maybe now I'm in a position where I can. And because you listened to me and now I'm giving you options and, you know, validating that your story is, you know, the story that happened to you. And I believe it. I think that just brings down some more walls. And now across the industry, obviously with Reg F coming through and the CFPB really outlining exactly how many phone calls can be made to a person. And, you know, we're in 2022. Nobody's answering their phone anyway. So you can make as many phone calls as you want, but nobody's going to pick up. So you have this situation where they're, you know, collection agencies, they get fees off of what they collect. So, you know, they get revenue, but it's not a ton to put into technology and easier, simple ways of dealing with collecting bills from people, which has left a big gap between how people want to be communicated with versus how they have the ability to communicate with them. So we're seeing a big increase in more fintech type companies coming to banks and creditors and lenders saying, you know, we have AI, we have ways to communicate with people via text, via email, meeting them where they want to be met to have this conversation. And it's a conversation nobody really wants to have, let's be honest, right? Nobody wants to rehash the whatever it was that happened in their life that made them not pay their bill today, or for when they didn't pay, you know? So it's, I think that the overall feeling of the industry has come to realize that we really have to meet the person where they want to be talked to, how they want to be talked to, as like they want to feel like a real person that has a valid story and a reason why they didn't pay their bills. So they just, you know, nobody wakes up and says, you know what, I'm just going to not pay my bills anymore. You know, something happened. And having technology, having a change of, you know, being more empathetic than being, you know, a dictator of what this person can and cannot do when it comes to paying their bill is starting to change the industry, because they, you know, we're a little bit behind the ball, but I think now that there's, with these regulations and people just not wanting to speak on the phone anymore, it's forced a lot of folks to really come to today's day and age and get technological with their solutions to collecting.
Makes sense. And it's so fascinating to hear you talk about what I feel to be true and think is really that shift where you're talking about the old school collection tactics that you outlined versus now. And then you even said it, which is the word I was going to lead with, which is the empathy part, right? And helping that other person feel heard and understood, and then working on that solution. I love what you said about, you know, what is your intention with this bill, with this debt? Like, what do you, and again, most people want to be responsible. It's just that they either can't, or they're worried about it, or they're worried about other bills and other things. And, you know, how do they make that happen? And if they have to make a choice between this or that, then, you know, it's tough sometimes. But I love how you said that. And it's really, for me, again, it's the same thing for sales, right? The old school sales tactics versus empathy and listening and caring and asking questions and wanting to know what makes that other person tick and what they really want versus what you just want to sell them. Right. And in collections, it's what you just want to collect money from them and you don't really care about them as a person versus how do you work with them as a person? Where, because this is what I see as well, is organizations or people who know or think that empathy is the right way to go. And then they say, OK, well, if that's what people want, let's pretend to do that. Or I can try to be empathetic and do that, but I don't really care. How much of that, you know, affects, let's say, the collection side? You know, is that a thing that you saw, like I've seen in sales, where people pretend to care and then behind the scenes they really don't? And, you know, where that comes across, maybe not as effective.
Sure. I think, you know, there's folks who will fake it till they make it, right? And be the actor and not really believe in what it is that they do. And maybe they have some success at the beginning, but you know, it's not going to be sustainable, because you know, we're people too. You know, the other person on the other end of the phone can hear your voice and your inflection and whether or not you really mean it, you know? So it's not for me to be empathetic. It's for the person that I'm talking to feel the empathy on the other end of the phone. So if it's not coming out and they can't feel it on the other end of the phone, it's not going to be as successful as it is if you are truly feeling empathetic about this person and their situation and all of these people in their situation. You know, one of the things that was very strange to me about debt collections is the folks that I worked with, my coworkers, none of them were like, you know, we're not cashing $250,000 checks at the end of the day, right? So we're all people who have things that are going on that are great, bad, somewhat okay, not as much as we want it to be. And people didn't give that same grace to the people that they were talking on the phone. And when you remove that that empathy and that grace, and even if it's just fake, it's not going to be received the same way as truly feeling empathetic and making the people on the other end of the phone feel like you actually really care about their situation. I think you can tell.
For sure. Well, and that's why I think it's interesting, because I'm starting to do some more stuff with collection companies. And, you know, I always get the question, well, what do you know about debt collection and what have you done working in it? And it's like, it doesn't matter. I mean, even at the end of the day, it's not even B2C, D2C, it's not B2B, it's H2H, right? It's one human talking to another human, trying to help them get to some kind of better place or resolution or achieve a goal. And when you break it down like that, then all the fundamentals are the same. And it's basically the same part. So it's so great hearing you talk about that, and hopefully that resonates either people listening to this that are in the collection industry or in the debt industry or not, and just taking that and listening like, okay, how do I apply that for you? So obviously there's the debt side and the collection, and we might not think of it as sales, but like you said, which I appreciate, is like realizing it is sales, it is persuasion, it is moving someone forward. In scaling the teams that you've done and or what you've seen other teams do successful, what have been the keys to your success in building out, let's say, sales, we're using that term, operations?
Sure.
And teams?
You know, obviously having good prep, you know, processes that are that have been tried and true, you know, having camaraderie around into your teams, very important. A lot of folks these days are talking about culture, and I think that there's a lot of false ideas of what culture is and what it isn't.
Like what? What do you mean by that? Like, what is and isn't in some buckets?
So I feel like when you have a culture at a company, okay, and I'm in that company, I feel like we've cultivated a culture. It's great. And we want to bring people into it. But we want to bring them into our culture and have them adapt to that culture instead of bringing someone into the culture and letting them have an impact on the culture as a whole. So, like, think about it like you put a drop of red dye into a glass of water. It doesn't just stay that little spot of red dye and go to the bottom. It leaks out to the whole glass of water and becomes pink, right? I want to bring people into my organization who are going to not just mold into whatever idea of culture that we think we have. I want them to come in as their authentic self and have a impact on the organization. I don't want them to feel like they need to like fit into the box of our organization. I want them to be a part of the living organization and impact all of us. And I think a lot of folks, especially in the collections industry, have maybe a false sense of what their culture is. I mean, when you're in a vacuum and you don't have anyone like saying, well, you can't get employees to stick. Oh, well, you know, they're not really vibing with our culture. Maybe the culture's not that great. Like, these are the questions, like, I don't think people really ask themselves when they feel like, you know, we're just bringing people in and we want them to fit into the culture, but we want them to fit into us and what we do rather than growing the team and having it be impactful for both people and both the employee and the company.
Where is that balance with recruiting where when it's done in a way that's very supportive for the culture, you're hiring more for cultural fit and people who are going to share the mission, vision, and values than necessarily the skill, because you can always teach the skill.
Yes.
And so how much do you focus on that? Like, you in that mode, which I love the analogy with the red dye in the water, is still wanting people to be on board and focused on what the company's culture is mostly about, and then also, you know, the part where they're going to bring in who they are.
Yeah, I mean, we can teach skills all day, right? I mean, yeah. If you have a good process and you have it documented and you have, you know, a good core group of people who can teach it, you know, you can teach anybody to do anything given enough time and tools. But, you know, if obviously they have to have a want and a desire to be there, to be the mission, to be doing whatever it is you're doing, selling that product, communicating with a person who owes a debt. They have to have some kind of, you know, desire to be there. It might not have to be exactly like, I want to get up and collect bills from people all day, but maybe you just want to get up and connect with people all day, because that's essentially what I'm asking you to do. Yeah, at the end of the call, just ask them to pay their bill. But, you know, it's more that if we can have that base of that, that core group of folks who have who all speak the same, in the same tune, sing the same song. When you bring people in and you let them give what they have as themselves, and you teach them how to do what the job is, sales, debt collections, whatever, I think it's going to be a better result. I think you're going to have people who stick around longer because they just feel like they're a part of something rather than I have to like mold myself to fit into whatever this is. I've worked at a lot of places, you know, I've worked in the places where you feel like they think that the culture is good, but every day I walk into the room and I just don't feel good. You know, it's a, you know, and you have your like your core groups of people, you're at the cliques, what have you, there's just not very welcoming. And then there's been places that I've worked at that like you walk in the door and everybody lights up and it's a wonderful place to be. I mean, company culture has been big in the headlines lately. But I think is simpler than creating like this, like we have beer taps in the lunchroom, foosball in the game room. Like, you know, that's great and appreciated very much. But at the end of the day, you know, we're spending a lot of time with the people, you know, 40 plus hours a week. That has to have a good camaraderie. You have to have teamwork. You have to have a sense of competition to keep people driving and motivated to make that sale, to collect that bill.
Makes sense. And so if we balance that with, like, there's the culture, like you said, there's the people part, and then there's the doing it and teaching them and then building that framework. Over the years, as you've grown, scaled, and had to deal with the complexity of that, what are some big challenges that you've seen, experienced, or that surprised you as you scaled out teams from, all right, let's just bring in the right people who know what to do, to, all right, we need to give them a playbook and a framework. Otherwise, we're going to have a whole bunch of people doing whatever they want, and that might not be successful.
Sure. So the folks who – I'm going to ask you to repeat the question because I have – somebody mowing their lawn next to me and it's taking my attention away. So
no worries.
Can you ask that again?
So as you've grown and scaled teams, what's the biggest challenge that you've faced or had to overcome, you know, when you're putting in systems and processes and procedures to help with scalability?
Sure. So you'll always have folks, or I've always had folks that have come in who think that they know everything, right? They've been in the industry for a long time. You're gonna give them how we do it here, and they're gonna be like, "Oh, that's great. Do it for a couple of days, and then slide back into whatever it is they're comfortable with." So that's a challenge. It's not an impossible challenge, but it is a challenge because you have to. It's hard getting folks to unlearn things or be open to learning something new, especially in sales and collections, because, you know, maybe they've had a lot of success in their past doing what it was that they did. And that's great. But sometimes things aren't transferable. Sometimes, like for folks who have gone from a sales position to a debt collections position, for example, you know, there's a lot of rules and regulations when it comes to debt collections. Like you have to collect the bill, but I also have to make sure that I tell them all of these nuanced, disclosures and legal things and all of this other stuff, where a salesperson would just want to be like fast and dirty and I'm going to get it done. And we're going to talk and it's going to be over. But no, you have to say all of these things too. And they're like, well, I don't want to say them or I didn't have to say them before. And so sometimes it can be difficult in the debt collection realm because you're getting people from all over the place. You're getting from sales, other call centers, customer service, where it's a little bit more ad hoc than it is structured, like a collection call.
And how do you balance that from a leadership perspective, which is wanting your team, no matter what department they're in this case here, if we're talking about these collection calls, where you want them to be them, bring their personality, bring their empathy, bring all of those things, and then balancing it with the compliance needs and what you need them to say and not say, you know, and where that kind of control or scripting comes in, and balanced with, but also please have a human conversation with somebody. Like, how do you manage that?
Yeah, it's a challenge. And the challenge starts at the beginning of the call, unfortunately. You call someone, you get that right person on the phone, and now you have to confirm that you're talking to the right person. And now I have to ask you very personal questions like, what's your social security number? And like those, obviously you're going to hit this barrier immediately. And for someone who has had sales experience, customer service, call center experience, you don't hit walls like that so early in the call. You know, you don't have a literal huge hurdle to get over to get this person to confirm they are who they're speaking with. So again, it just comes back down to empathy and understanding the other person on the other end of the phone. And obviously you're going to have some experts on your team. I pair those folks who have expert level experience in some other realm with experts who have worked at the company who do have that, that special touch with empathy, who can, for example, when I would have to get somebody through that very difficult, journey of, hi, I have the right person on the phone. Hi, I need to confirm it's the right person. Hi, here's the last four of your social. Can you confirm them? If you do it in a flow where it just seems like it's just a natural conversation, 9 times out of 10, I never had an issue because I sounded like a person who was wanting to achieve. I had a goal that I was trying to accomplish. I need you for that goal to accomplish that goal. And my tone of voice is much more, I'm here to help you than, right. Hi, is this so-and-so? Okay, so-and-so. I need to confirm that this is the right person. I don't like talking like that. And I'm just like, I'm hanging up on myself.
I know. You know? It's being that professional, whether it's mushy and empathetic, like people might say, you know, when you go into that full realm of really diving into what's going on with somebody, but even professional versus combative, yes. Right? Or yes. Confrontational. It's two different modes, and collections always in the past was that confrontational. You're the bad person. I'm calling to collect this and get you to make this decision and take some action. So I think that's interesting, again, to hear what you're talking about. So one last question for this part, and then I'm excited because I know we're going to have a continuation of this conversation. I have a whole bunch of other things that you're not expecting that I'm going to ask you now at that point. If you had to start over, or if you're looking at like starting a new team, a new sales team, collection team, anything in that where, you know, falls under the persuasion side, what would you do first? What have you learned where you're like, oh yeah, now that I know, here's what I'm going to do if I had to do it all over again?
The way that I've done things has evolved over time, right? Mm-hmm. And the first instinct when you're bringing and you're putting a team together is to teach them all the things that you need to know about whatever it is, the product that you're selling or the creditors or banks or the type of paper that you're collecting. But instead, I'm going to put that aside. I put that aside for a while. First, we talk about emotional intelligence. And I have a huge, my husband put together a big PowerPoint about how emotional intelligence is used in the workplace and how not just on the phone, but, you know, in your professional conversations with coworkers, your boss, other leaders in the company. It's knowing how to manage yourself and how that can help you manage other folks and accomplish the goal that you want to get out of whatever, relationship or scenario or thing that you're trying to accomplish, makes life so much easier. This is my life lesson for everybody. Understand, learn more about emotional intelligence because it's going to make your life a lot nicer.
100%. I mean, and I couldn't agree more. And I love that, you know, that's the big thing to focus on. And I think that's such an important pillar. Once somebody understands that, embraces it, and puts more power behind that, then it helps, again, like you said, in all realms, right? With coworkers, with teams, with your boss, with potential clients, customers, people you're dealing with, because you just approach it different. And again, it's not about then just like being all emotional. It's about being intelligent about what you do, what people want. So I love that. So for people who want to find out more, maybe get in contact with you, learn more of these lessons, or reach out to you, or find out even more of what Beyond Finance does, if they're interested. So I know that people can go to beyondfinance.com. If they want, they can email you at kdecker@beyondfinance.com. And then also, I know, because this is how we initially connected, which is through LinkedIn, is that you're on there. If people search Kelly Decker, and all of these links will be in the show notes as well. Kelly, thank you for coming on and sharing all this info. I appreciate you being on here chatting, and I'm excited to chat some more on the second part of this episode.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
And for everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being a part of my journey and goal to shift sales from a dirty word to something the world trusts and respects, just like we're even talking about the collection side, while also helping you close more deals and make more money. Until next time, thanks for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.